For the first time in Connecticut's history, we are launching early voting across the state today. In fact, it starts in just a few hours at 10 o'clock this morning, and it will be offered several days in several locations leading up to the presidential primary election, which is set for next week. How exactly does early voting work, though, especially because this is the first time we're doing it in Connecticut? For all the details, we have Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas back on the show. Good morning, Stephanie Thomas. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Do you have any anxiety going into today? This is like brand new territory for all of us.
I don't. I feel like we did, all of us, we've done everything we could do to prepare. So now we just have to see how many people show up and how it works. And, you know, our registrars are so talented. They'll work out any kinks as they go.
So let's walk through this, because my understanding is obviously every town and city they're not going to all look identical. They're not all going to be offering the same thing. Obviously, we always say that website, myvote.ct.gov, to find your polling location. But give us kind of a general idea of how today is going to work for people.
Sure. It does look a little different than what people are used to on election day. Instead of going to your usual polling place in most towns, it's going to be town hall. But you can find your town's location on that same website, myvote.ct.gov. And when you show up, it's likely to be in a community room or something like that in your town hall. You'll check in like usual, except most towns will be using a tablet or laptop because they're doing a real-time lookup of your eligibility status, making sure you didn't already vote by absentee ballot or something like that. And then you'll vote like usual, but your ballot will go into an envelope, which you will seal and deposit in the receptacle. And then that'll be stored until Election Day when it will be opened and counted.
And I just want to remind folks, you obviously, since it's a primary election, you have to be registered as a Democrat or a Republican, correct?
That is correct. If you are a new voter who has not registered at all previously, you can still register and then go back on another day and vote. And if you're an unaffiliated voter, you can still enroll as a Democrat or Republican, but you won't be able to vote until Election Day on Tuesday.
Okay, so that's good to know. So if you are not, because that's what I was thinking, is unaffiliated. So if you're a new voter, totally different. But if you're unaffiliated, you can still vote, but you have to wait till April 2nd if you wanted
Correct.
To register. Okay. And all of that you could find on that website, myvote.ct.gov.
Yes.
Okay.
We tried to make it easy.
No, I think the other thing, too, that I've understood from our previous talks. Again, we have the Secretary of the State here, Stephanie Thomas, and we've been anticipating this. I mean, this passed back in 2022. We knew that early voting was going to be coming here. So here we are finally. It's launching today. And it looks like there are going to be several days this week. I'm looking at today, tomorrow, Thursday, and Saturday. And I just want to ask this. For municipalities that have set up early voting, are they doing all four of those days? Or, again, does that depend on where you live?
Yes, that is required. So every single town in Connecticut will have one early voting location for all 4 days. It'll be the same location. The hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and that is universal across every town.
I'm curious, and of course, we have to see how things go for the general election in November. But is there, I don't even know how to ask this question, is there like a goal in mind? So if we get to the end of this year and we see that, wow, early voting, our voter turnout went from 20% in Connecticut to 50%, let's keep early voting around. Is there like a magic number, Secretary of the State, that we're looking for in Connecticut to keep early voting as an option? Or is this forever, we're keeping early voting going forward?
You know, it's too soon to tell. We have a couple of other reforms potentially happening in the coming years. As you know, in November, there'll be a question on the ballot about whether or not Connecticut should allow for what some people call universal access to voting or no excuse absentee ballots. If that passes, I think the legislature will be looking at creating a more sort of holistic program that works all together. Most other states who have had early voting, and as you know, it's been around since the 80s, it took about 3 years for them to get to understand the pattern, because it does depend on how much it's advertised, how competitive the race is, and so many other factors. I don't think 1 year is enough to know.
And I know that you have talked about this on the show many times, Secretary of the State. Voter turnout, unless it is a presidential year, we're usually pretty low, right?
Correct. 80% during presidential, but during municipal election years like last year, that drops all the way down to about 32%. And obviously, only Democrats and Republicans can vote in this primary. But, you know, if you look at 2020, which was fairly competitive, we only had between like 20 and 30% turnout of Republican, Democrat, respectively. So what I've been doing, a lot of people have told me, like, it's not that competitive, I might not go out. But I'm urging everyone to go out and vote who's eligible, just to help us stress test the system. We want our towns to be able to figure out how many staff people they need, et cetera, going into the November election. So the more people who turn out this week and on Tuesday, the more helpful.
We are talking about early voting in the state of Connecticut, launching for the first time today in our state's history. But we also are talking about the legislative session, which we are in the midst of. And earlier this month, Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas actually testified in support of a bill that would create a board overseeing municipal elections. Lawmakers also say this bill would allow Dropbox surveillance video to be made public and the footage retained long enough for prosecutions. It comes after, of course, the disastrous 2023 Democratic primary election in Bridgeport. Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas is here. Could you talk a little bit more about this legislation to create cleaner elections in our state?
Sure. There are quite a few bills circulating around. I think you're speaking about SB 441 and HB, I think, 5458. Between them, they have many measures I think will help keep our election safer, more secure. In addition to what you mentioned, there's also language in there that would restrict the window of time that absentee ballot applications are available. There have been allegations that people, you know, right now there's I could take out applications for an election next year. So there's been talk about sort of banking these applications and circulating them for, you know, many, many, many months in advance of an election. So the bill would close that window. And as you mentioned, the accountability board that would help mitigate issues as they occur. In more of a real-time fashion instead of having to wait for the legislature to be in session, and many other good things.
Well, I do know that, you know, again, as you mentioned, there are a lot of pieces of legislation being talked about up in Hartford right now. So I do know that Republicans, for example, don't feel like we are addressing some really major items, especially after Bridgeport and absentee ballot fraud that allegedly happened. I mean, a judge literally looked at that video. It went national, as you and I have talked about in the past, and they kind of feel like it's being swept under the rug overall. For example, Representative Perillo, I've had on my show before, and he said, why aren't we looking at harsher penalties? For example, he said, no one who has committed election fraud in our state has done jail time in over 20 years. I mean, what do you think about penalties like that being put into place?
You know, I have to live with elections every day, and we have very harsh penalties already for most election-related crimes. 10 years in prison or 5 years in prison, $5,000 fines per incident. So the issue, in my opinion, is not the penalties, but why aren't these cases being adjudicated? As you know, there have been cases going through the system, but I think they're taking too long, and I'm not sure why no one has received these fines. So I don't think it's tougher penalties, but quicker adjudication.
Well, that's, I think, and I don't know if that's like a loophole thing or if like you said, if it's just taking too long and then it becomes old news. I mean, I am going to name drop. I know that, you know, obviously from a professional standpoint, I'm sure you can't, you know, say the name, but I mean, Wanda Jeter Pataki, I'm sorry, in Bridgeport, it is crazy to me that it is literally proven, a judge literally had to order new elections because she is caught on camera doing this, stuffing ballot boxes. And not only does she not get any penalties, she was just reelected as the vice chair of the Democratic Town Committee in Bridgeport. I just think it's crazy. We're not only not penalizing her, we're awarding her. We're allowing her to just continue on like nothing happened. And I think that's not fair. And it makes people question, not just in Bridgeport, but across the state, what else are we allowing to just kind of be dusted under the rug? I think it's concerning.
Well, you make a perfect point. As you know, there was a case in front of the State Elections Enforcement Commission in 2019, and COVID intervened, apparently some staffing issues. So that investigation was not finalized until 2023, and it was referred for criminal indictment, and it's still going through the courts. I think that's much, much, much too long, especially for an election-related crime. So I'm sure she will have her day in court. I'm not sure when, but again, I think the penalties are there. We are trying to close some of the loopholes that exist that people have allegedly used in the past. And I think the legislation out there is doing a good job of that. But what's not being addressed, I think, is the time frame. And there are some bills circulating about mandating a much tighter time frame. And I think that would be hugely impactful.
And Secretary of the State, I so appreciate your time commenting on these. I know this could be an hour long conversation, but we don't have the time for that. However, I do have one more quick question before you go. This was a piece of legislation that had a clause in there that has really ramped up a lot of concern. I don't remember the House bill, forgive me. I believe it's the second one you had mentioned. It was like 54 something, but there's a Section 27 in there that I remember. I remember that number. And it would basically call for the Independent Party in Connecticut to rebrand itself. I'm wondering who put that clause forward. Where did that come from? To me, it seems like it's to eliminate Independent Party competition or to confuse voters. I'm not really sure who thought that might be a good idea.
You know, it's that bill has been circulating for a while, and I'm certainly in support of it. A lot of people get confused. I was on an interview show a couple of weeks ago, and the host said, okay, don't forget, if you're independent, you can still enroll in a party. And I'm like, no, you can't. A lot of people, especially people who move here from other states or watch national news, think independent is like unaffiliated. They don't understand that it's a party, much like Republican, Democrat, Green Party, Working Families Party. So what happens, they show up to vote or switch parties, like we just talked about. If you're unaffiliated, you can still enroll in a party and vote on Tuesday. But if you're independent, it's too late to switch. That date passed in January. So people show up thinking they can change parties and they can't. I do think it's confusing, and I think this is one way to solve it for sure. And it came up in the testimony that people were interested in sort of sidelining this independent party as a minor party, but that's not true. I've been at voter registration fairs where young people, you know, many of them just write independent, not realizing it's unaffiliated. So we're just trying to clear up some confusion, and I think it's a good idea.
Well, Stephanie Thomas, we appreciate having you here, and thank you for taking all our questions today. We certainly look forward to talking again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too.